been a short period of time and a rather intensive presentation. First, my views on a new organization would make it such that it would have to be dominated by non-nuclear weapon states. Nuclear weapon states, as we see, are reluctant to make any progress whatever, and they will find any reason to escape of anything which requires a consensus. Even at the discussions I'm remembering under President Clinton in the 90s, when there was an ad hoc committee formed to begin negotiations on the Shannon Mandate, the Israelis said that they would they criticized this as being they would not commit suicide. That was the language that they used. It's very charged and emotional. And so if you're attempting to get a consensus of all in the same package, my own feeling is that that this is likely to never have a successful outcome. So if you start, the trilateral initiative was limited to Russia and the United States, with the IAEA being the host. There was discussion about bringing Britain in, and it was decided that it wouldn't be helpful, that it would make a third party, and it was already difficult enough at that point. Now, the model verification agreement, which is included in that Harvard document that I cited, includes a committee which would be formed of countries that enter into such agreements. So they would have, in effect, a mechanism for comparing the activities that are undertaken in each state. So there are various ways in which you can see this working in a longer term kind of arrangement. So now, as your comments are very rich and very poignant and very intensive. So I would say that the IAEA statute has two parts in it that talk about disarmament. One is specific, that says, and I don't remember the exact wording, but I'm going to say that the agency is required to conform to international efforts within the UN system, etc., in relation to nuclear disarmament. So they are expected to be a player and be a constructive influence. The other is that the safeguards agreement, the only verification the agency carries out is called safeguards. But there is no definition of safeguards, either in the agreement, in the NPT, or anywhere. In effect, and there are maybe five different types of safeguards agreements now. The predominant one is the Egypt arrangement, which is a non-proliferation, binding commitment, comprehensive safeguards agreement, etc. But there are the 66 agreements in various states, voluntary offer agreements. There's a Taiwan arrangement. There were things in South Africa, etc., that were undertaken, that were all undertaken under the aegis of being a safeguards-related activity. So a safeguards activity, which is FMCT or even broader than that, is completely within the scope of what could be accommodated within the agency system. So you, or the negotiators, have to decide how much to pile in on this. Will you strengthen the system by continuing to add to the obligations from this one organization? And if not, and if that is not your opinion, where is the split? I'm very sensitive to this discriminatory arrangement. So the split that I suggested was specifically keep the military stuff for a new organization outside of the IAEA. Keep everything which relates to clandestine production, to disposition of these materials when they go into the peaceful sector, or we put them in a borehole or whatever, within the IAEA, because A, they can do it, they do it already, and B, if you create, if you give this job to somebody else, then you clearly have perpetuated a discriminatory arrangement between the two. The verification objectives, all of these things need to be phased in over time. What's most important at the beginning? What's most important 15 years from now, 50 years from now, etc.? How often do you look at this situation and make adjustments? And do you look at all states, only states that are nuclear armed, only NPT states that are P5 effectively? Or do you look at pairings? We know that Russia and the United States have had a long adversarial relationship, and so you want to continue to be sure that those two are addressed. India, Pakistan is another two that are easy to take into account in a close pairing. I appreciate India and China also have some interaction, U.S. and China, so it's never so clear, but the dominant political, geopolitical interests are the relationship of Israel to the American-Soviet or American-Russian adversarial relationship is not even worthy of having a discussion about. That's a separate issue entirely. Same with France and Britain. They're kind of playing in the margins, but not mainstream. So the agency can do many things. And there was an effort to, Mohamed El-Baradei was sent by the agency to come to Geneva to convince the delegates of the CTBTO that the IAEA should verify the CTBTO. And that was rejected. Could have done it, but look what a distraction that would have been for the IAEA without bringing anything constructive. So my own sense again is that this this prevention can be a huge job, much more so than the military sector probably. And so if you give that to the IAEA and the military to the other, then I think that the confrontation, the disarmament business, when non-nuclear weapon states like Egypt and Mexico, etc., confront the United States and the other eight and say, what are you doing next year? What's your plan? How are you going to take the next step in this process? Then I think that that's a mechanism that can produce meaningful results. Sorry that there's could be a much longer discussion.
Thank you. Mr. Pachinko, would you like to add something?